You ready?
I'm ready. Are you ready?
Which man versus myth is this? Is this three or four?
I think it's three.
I'm losing track.
I think it's three. We're just having too much fun, man.
Too much fun.
We're having too much fun.
So many mans and myths to go around.
And many more to come.
Many more to come. I feel like maybe we, from now on, we can do the you choose, like for the listeners, they can choose. Mm. I feel like we should let them get in on that.
Yeah, if you guys want to choose the myth or the man.
Well, there's so many that they might already have something in mind that we hadn't thought of.
All right. You know? Well, you guys get on that.
Get on that.
Start doing our job for us.
But today we have
the
big dog, one of the big dogs himself, invented his own salad.
Yeah.
Just a guy named Guy.
Yeah, guy named Guy.
Julius Caesar.
Or you can call him Jules.
The family Jules.
Yeah. Whatever you want.
I feel like that's the only family Jules. Yeah. We'll call him family Jules. Or Guy. I like Guy.
I like Guy. Yeah. That works.
Gaius. Emperor.
Dictator.
Dictator. Yeah. Yes. He kind of did everything. He was a Renaissance man before the Renaissance.
He was ahead of his time, truly.
He started the whole shebang.
Exactly. Just a good guy all around. Well, maybe not a good guy, but important historical figure.
We'll I don't think that. He had a subpar animated movie made about him.
No, he did not.
But Beowulf did.
And that and is
we will briefly touch on that travesty as well. That's our myth.
Classic.
But we're going to start with the man.
Yeah. Let's go. Let's get into it, shall we?
Let's do it. He had many names, and he has inspired many a tale.
Mm-hmm.
The Shakespeare play.
Yeah.
Did you have to read Julius Caesar? That's Julius Caesar in high school?
No, I did not, thank goodness.
I think that's a staple of the American grade 10 experience.
Not for me, thank goodness.
Did you have to do where you have to memorize Mark Antony's Friends Romans Countrymen speech?
I did not have to memorize
that. That was so stupid. It was. That's just a waste. It's a scam. It's a waste of a class period so your teacher doesn't have to do anything.
Oh, yeah.
They made every single one of us memorize and just do the monologue.
And that's going to make you a more well-rounded citizen.
Yeah. It's like, am I going to show up to like a Bible study here in the American South? And I mean, I don't show up to them anyways, but what am I going to show them and be like,
show
be like
up, no?
Hey, JR, you know any cool monologues from Shakespearean plays? Well, Gladys, I do have one in mind.
I do.
I mean,
thank you, 10th grade.
Don't waste my time.
You know exactly. I mean, I get the importance.
My taxes pay your salary.
Of Shakespeare.
Teach me.
And why do you have to memorize monologues?
Yeah, I don't know. It's dumb.
It is.
It's real dumb. He did not come from humble beginnings.
So no, he did not.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Real quick. Basically, Roman society was basically just split in two. The patricians. I don't know if there was a Patricia involved that created that name. I don't think so.
I don't think so.
And the plebeians.
Or so, the plebs, as we'll call them.
Yeah. Filthy plebs.
Yeah.
So upper and lower class for general purposes.
Yeah.
Not a ton of mobility, really. It was not a very... they didn't have a lot of opportunities to move up. You could, but they didn't really have a set system in place.
Yeah.
And supposedly... He had claimed to a special lineage, traced himself to Aeneas, who was a prominent figure with the city of Troy in the Trojan War.
Yeah.
He was a Trojan prince.
Also, he claimed to be a descendant of the goddess Venus, I believe.
Yeah, Aeneas was supposedly the son of Venus. So if you don't know, the founding of Rome, it's generally as the myth, the sort of... Because it's kind of history in a way, but it's not really proven. But basically, Rome kind of rose from the ashes of Troy. Like, after the Trojan War, people kind of dispersed, and you had survivors, such as Aeneas. I think he survived the Trojan War. But they ended up basically founding Rome.
Yeah.
Or, like, people from that war kind of... And that's it was really just a way of, like, tracing legitimacy back to, you know, ancient Greek myth... You know, gods and heroes, and you know, they were a big deal, so now we're a big fucking deal.
Yeah.
And now look, we've got our own city.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and as Caesar, you know, displays, you want to connect yourself to something important and bigger like that in order to kind of, you know, establish, you know, your divinity. That's going to help out when you're be the ruler of an entire empire.
Well, and even by the time Caesar came along, it had already become somewhat common practice to, in a way, deify successful previous politicians or generals, just people who did things. It was almost like you couldn't be a god while you were alive, but once you died, you kind of...
Get that
in
status.
A way, you sort of became part of the pantheon, kind of.
Yeah.
You were, like, kind of godlike. So, but the thing is, as we'll see, that is a dangerous precedent to claim legitimacy from divinity. You know, to kind of put yourself above the laws of man, in a way. Because the death of Caesar is, for general purposes, thought of as sort of the fall. Like, that's when it starts the decline of the Republic.
Yeah.
Which, you know, eventually becomes the Roman Empire, and then eventually that just sort of, you know,
yeah, we know what
turns into a big shit fest. Anyhow, he was a talented lad.
Yeah,
he obviously was educated. He had, you know, means. His pops was also a BFD. He was also a politician. That was really the only way to kind of what you'll see in a lot of this is like. So many of the events that sort of define the Republic are really just power struggling between prominent families, pretty much. So even though he was from a well-off family, they weren't like, you know, they weren't the biggest sort of...
Yeah, it wasn't like...
They weren't ringleaders, so he did, in a way, still kind of earn his way upwards. He actually had to get rolling at a young age because his father died when he was, I think, 16...
Yeah, I think so.
Around 85 BC. And so that made him sort of the head of the family. And at the same time, his family was involved basically in a type of civil war kind of thing going on. His uncle, Gaius Marius, and his uncle's rival, Lucius Cornelius Sulla, better known as Sulla.
Sulla. Or Sully.
And so you actually have... It's actually kind of like... I could see how... I mean, I don't know if this was his motivation, but I can see how Shakespeare would want to write dramas pertaining to, like, family tragedy if he was going to base it partially off of this.
Mm-hmm.
I could see him doing one of those. I mean, not anymore, because he's probably dead. I mean, we don't know for sure, but he's probably dead. We'll see. Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see. But one thing else that you should know is that religion was a big part of the Roman state, and... You might be thinking, well, I thought, you know, Rome was like Catholics and Catholicism. Obviously, that didn't really come along until much after Caesar's time. They actually had their own, you could technically think of it as a pagan religion, sort of, polytheistic, for sure.
They just took the Greek gods, slapped some new names on them, and this is ours now.
They tweaked it.
Yeah,
they didn't culturally steal, appropriated they tweaked it. They culturally appropriated the Greek pantheon. Zeus's Roman name was Jupiter.
Yeah.
And
they basically just renamed most of the gods after
and most of the planets. They named the planets then, after. But
as we look at it today, you got like God of War, Mars instead of Ares, it's Mars, so.
Yeah. But so early on he starts working his way up the chain. He held both religious and political positions.
Yeah, he became the high priest of Jupiter.
Yeah.
At the age of 16.
How about that now, plebs? I'm the priest of the whole planet.
Exactly. That sounds a little like Mormonism.
I thought that was like you die and then
you get a planet or something. I don't know.
But like who's on your planet? Because if all the other Mormons also get their own planet.
Must be lonely.
Yeah.
Or do you get like your own? We're getting off topic. We'll do a Mormon episode one of these days.
Going off the rails. But basically, he was basically to kind of escape persecution from this guy, Sulla, who basically won that, in a way, kind of won that temporary civil war.
Yeah, won the feud.
Yeah, he got power.
It's like Hatfields and McCoys.
You know, Julius Caesar, also known as Julius Caesar.
Julius Caesar.
I believe that's a correct pronunciation.
That's what I've always heard.
So. Yeah. Anyhow, Julius was like, well, I got to get the fuck out of here. Basically, he got his priesthood taken away from him. Because of Sulla, pretty much.
And his inheritance as well.
Yeah, he got everything just pretty much stripped away. You know, to the victor, go the spoils. You know, your family loses, your family's, you know, you're going to lose all your shit. And he was like, well, I have to leave, but I want to survive, so I guess it's the army. It's the military, pretty much. Because at the time, even though it's the Roman Republic, they were still doing some very imperialistic, you know, shit. Like, conquering, you know, as much territory as they possibly could. That was actually a great way to prove yourself, was to set off with the legions.
Mm-hmm.
And which was 5,000 men, I believe, is a legion. It's 5,000 men.
I believe you.
It's 5,000. It's 5,000. But basically, he was like, yeah, I got to get out of here. So he basically just kicks ass for a while.
All across Europe.
All across Europe, and even eventually into parts of Asia and sort of like, well, the Middle East, as we know it today, is technically Southwest Asia.
Yeah, or they would maybe call it Asia Minor back then.
Possibly. He also had you know, some good times, some real good times in Egypt.
Oh, yeah.
Which we'll get into.
Yeah, that was a little later in his life. But
basically, he hopped around. In particular, he spent a little bit of time with King Nicomedes in Bithynia. I don't have any idea where that is. Mm. All the names are different now.
Okay.
Anyhow, he spent so much time there that people basically started, like, rumors of, like, he's getting gay with the king.
Yeah.
He's like, no way, bro, we're just pals.
No, no homo, bro.
We're just warring buddies, you know? He's got a legion, I got a legion.
Yeah.
You know, nobody.
We're trying togas together. Yeah, it's cool. It's cool.
Yeah, so at this point, he's still very young, but he'd already sort of began to... once he returned to Rome, not the city itself, but sort of the general, because Rome was really like the city and then all the territories around it. So Sulla dies in 78 BC, and he's like, okay, well, he was my main reason for staying away. I'm going to, you know, kind of go home. But since he didn't really have any money, because as you said, he lost his inheritance, he kind of basically stayed like in the low income suburbs among the plebs. But basically, he did some, basically, he was basically like doing some lawyer work, pretty much. Yeah. Acting as, you know, in a legal capacity. And he became known for his speaking skills, which every great leader
gifted
needs.
Orator.
It's started many a war. He was known by being, you know, doing a lot with his hands, passionate gestures, and apparently a high-pitched voice.
Yeah.
Which and I would not have guessed.
Yeah, me neither. But, I mean, maybe the people liked it.
We were take Europe.
He was talking...
With our legions.
Yeah. He got the support... of a lot of the other plebs by speaking out against corruption in the government and just talking about how, you know, most politicians aren't on your side. You know, they're not looking out for the little guy.
He was the people's hero.
Yeah. He was, he would have been a populist.
Yeah. So. And that's what eventually became a big reason that the other politicians wanted him gone. But basically, he's traveling around. He's a young man and he crosses the Aegean Sea and he gets kidnapped by pirates.
As was common in the time.
Yeah.
I guess.
Well,
I can only
if
assume.
You didn't know this, Rome pretty openly and, you know, pretty across the entire, they practiced slavery. So, you know, you had all the rich people who owned all this land looking for people to work the land so they could, you know, get richer. And so pirates would often take prisoners and then sell them as slaves back to
the Romans.
You know, and it's you can actually, I think you can actually buy your freedom. It was pretty common to eventually buy your freedom as a Roman slave and get out of that.
I remember hearing that from a college course, I think.
Yes. Anyhow, they're like, okay, well, you seem important. We're going to ransom you for 20 pieces of silver or talents.
Yeah, who knows?
20 units of silver.
20 silver units.
And he was like, 20? I'm worth at least 50. So he was like, you bitch, you better ask for 50.
Which they did.
I ain't no 20 silver, bitch.
Yeah, which they did. They were like, yeah.
They did. They were like, okay. So he gets away from them, but then throughout his, he goes back to kicking ass as a military, you know, badass. He raises his own fleet of ships and then finds those same pirates, captures them, takes them prisoner, and he crucifies them.
Yep.
Which supposedly he said he was going to do while they had him prisoner. He was like, "I'm going to crucify you."
Yeah, and they were like, whatever.
Oh,
dude.
Julius.
They always say that, but
kids say the darndest things.
Yeah, no, but he
followed through.
Yeah, and he slit their throats.
He slit their throats beforehand, you know, as you know, a show of mercy.
Yeah, but their bodies were still displayed on the cross.
He's like, "I'm going to crucify you, but I'm going to be a nice guy about
which,
it."
Which, man, just the Romans, they knew how to kill somebody.
Well, you know what? I say, let's pour one out for all the homies who made dope threats, but never got to follow through. You know,
all right,
for every story like this, there are 100 where they were like, you know,
pouring one out currently.
I'm gonna feed you to a dragon.
Pouring out a goblet of a vino,
a chalice of vino
for
our homies.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he got his just desserts.
Yeah.
And then he basically, once he got back to Rome, he started to climb the ladder. There are, he started as a, I guess it's pronounced quaestor.
Quaestor, and a military tribune as
military
well.
Military tribune.
In, I believe that's 69 BCE.
Yeah.
And a quaestor is just like an investigator. He would look into murders and like, it sounds like a cool job.
And I think he also handled like financial stuff too. It was like a detective slash accountant.
Yeah. These positions had like broad, I guess, job descriptions. Like you were doing a lot of stuff in one of these positions. He's
I'm quaestor.
Oh yeah, I'm just investigating murders. No, yeah, like you're doing accounting, making sure all the silver talents are where they need to be, balancing receipts.
Yeah, well, and also as a quaestor, you wouldn't necessarily be in Rome. You would go often to like sort of the territories that Rome possessed. It was almost like, kind of like a governorship, but not quite as that much power.
Yeah.
It's like an overseer position, basically. What you really wanted was to become consul.
Yeah, and that is the highest position.
And there were
two
consuls. Yeah, that was the highest you
could
go.
It's like co-president.
Co-president, kind of like you were technically above the Senate, but also kind of like the leader of the Senate, I believe. But basically, you were the big dog. That's what you wanted. And eventually, he did. But when he went to serve his quaestorship, he goes to Spain because, I mean, it wasn't probably really up to him because his wife had recently died. He had multiple wives. And that way, he was channeling his Mormonism.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it's not really a myth or a legend, but it supposedly he saw a statue of Alexander the Great while he was there in Spain. And he was like, at that point, he was at the same age where Alexander the Great had already conquered much of the known world. And he was like, I got to step my game up, yo.
Yeah. Felt bad. He's like, man, because Alexander the Great did it too at a very young age.
Yeah.
So he was already older than him when he had done all that. So he was like, yeah, like you said, got to step my game up. Wow.
Well,
like,
some people say you shouldn't compare yourself to like the goats, the greatest of all times, you know, mm-hmm. like those, because, you know, eventually you always feel like, you know, falling short. But at the same time, even in pursuing, you know, that ultimate sort of greatness, you're bound to achieve something, I think, even if you don't really go all the way.
Yeah.
So you got to set the bar really high. That way, even if you only make it halfway, you've still made it pretty far.
Yeah.
That's just my personal policy.
Mm.
Anyhow, 67 BC, comes back, gets another wife who was actually the granddaughter of Sulla. He eventually got divorced because they had divorce mm-hmm. in Rome. And I'm pretty sure that women could initiate the divorce as well.
I think so.
So in some ways they were, it's kind of odd, like they had slavery, but in other ways they were strangely progressive.
Yeah.
At the time.
Their slavery wasn't like American slavery though. It wasn't based on, you know, racism and like feeling like that certain people were subhuman. It was just like, it wasn't like, oh, they're,
it was kind of
color,
like a
so
social
a
status thing. Like your social yeah. status is very low.
So
like
you are
a slave.
Yeah.
Like that, your social status.
It didn't depend
low.
On
it
your race or background, things
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, because theoretically you could scale the ladder and
not
get
saying
out of it.
It's slavery was still, it was okay, but it's just,
yeah.
it's not like.
It was a different
it's
sort
not
of
like
dynamic.
Slavery in America.
Yeah. Anyhow, a couple years after he returned to Rome, 65 BC, he was elected curule aedile, which is the next step up, I believe, from
basically,
quaestor.
Yeah, it's basically just like a public housing official who also like takes care of festivals, like, and
There's like a kind of like a religious aspect.
Yeah,
to it.
But he also just made sure that all the public housing was in order. And during this position, he put on many Olympic like games. I've heard mm-hmm. that, like they were described as that lion hunts, just crazy stuff. To really kind of like rally
gladiator
the people around
battles.
It. Yeah, like people had a good time. It kind of made him more popular. They're like, this is the fun guy. You know, he
yeah.
likes to put on like
he's
games.
The fun uncle.
Exactly. Rome's yeah. fun uncle. So, yeah, once
yeah.
again.
So he further became sort of like a people's hero that way. And then mm-hmm. a couple years after that, he ran and was elected Pontifex Maximus,
which is basically a praetor.
It's basically, well, it's the high priest
yeah.
of the Roman religion in his case. So all, so he was Jupiter priest, and now he's like all the stuff. So, you know, blood sacrifices, you know, slaughtering lambs.
All the good
building
stuff.
Large bonfires, feasts, you know, that kind of thing.
Mutton legs.
Mutton legs, all of it. He just, you know, he was the guy.
That was him.
He was the guy. If you needed something, you went to Julius.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about that is that I feel like this is kind of when he started to shit in the face of the established politicians, because he's like, he got elected even though the people, the senators he was running against were, you know, more experienced and just generally more powerful. Everyone was accused of bribery. Like, and that's actually a really common thing of like, you got bribed, you got bribed. And mm-hmm. like, it doesn't, I mean, if everybody's doing it,
then is it really that bad? Well, yes.
Well, but, it's definitely not going to lose you the election.
Yeah.
Pretty much. At that time, a guy named Cicero, who you may have heard of, he was consul, and he kind of blew the doors off of a supposed conspiracy by a guy named Catalina Wine Mixer, to supposedly take control of the Republic and basically turn it into a dictatorship. That was the accusation. Some of the senators accused Julius of being part of that, which raises plenty of questions.
Mm-hmm.
As I was reading through this, it just reminded me like of Star Wars,
yeah.
you know, because like in the prequels, they've got like the Republic and then one guy gets too much power and then
yeah, and tries to take it all over and everything. It's well, successfully does take it over, I should say.
Yeah.
Anyhow,
it's crazy. He was a praetor, as you said, 62 BC. And then he basically got like upgraded to pro praetor, which is like a praetor, but
even
go
better.
Pro.
Yeah.
He basically like oversaw a lot of like a big chunk of Spain. I think it's southeastern Spain is what mm-hmm. it is now. But then, you know, some historians actually, they point to certain sources that say he was actually closer to performing some of the duties of a consul. So like he was a pro praetor, but there was kind of like he was ahead of his time,
yeah,
and of all of his colleagues, you know, he was getting those extra special duties.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, starting with when he lost his inheritance, he was in debt to a lot of people, like for much of his life.
Yeah, he was in a lot of debt.
Yeah, and there were certain laws about owing debts to people, and I believe you could theoretically be made a slave in some cases if you really couldn't pay it back.
Right, but you were also immune from being prosecuted for your debts as long as you held certain government positions or religious positions.
Yeah, so basically, like, your designation changed if you held a high up religious or public position. It was almost like you weren't considered a private citizen anymore because you performed an essential function.
Yeah, so you couldn't be prosecuted
yeah, it was,
like a private citizen.
Which is, it's an interesting idea for times back then where everything generally was pretty unstable. I can see the benefit of doing that. But basically, Caesar uses this as a way of like, I'm going to hop from one position to the next, and that way I can never go to jail or like, mm-hmm. you know, be made like a slave or.
Which, I mean, we
you know.
Still kind of see that today. I mean, people get away with crazy things, politicians, and they don't get arrested on
it. Well, it reminded me of like, because, you know, obviously we know a lot of people who have student loans.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those with a loan agreement, it's like you rack up a bunch of debt in undergrad. But if you go to grad school, you can have it postponed.
Yeah.
Like they can't force you to start making payments if you're still in school.
Yeah.
So it's like you're kind of putting it off.
Yeah, which, I mean, unless you're going to grad school to get, you know, a
well,
position,
the people I know do that,
pay.
they're like, yeah, I'm going to master's for, you know, I'm getting a master's in, like, you know, I don't know, horse studies. Horses
valuable,
are cool.
Valuable stuff.
I'm like, cool. And they're like, yeah, and I don't have to pay my loans until I'm done with that. And I'm like, won't you just have more loans, though? And they're like, yeah.
Yeah, but I'll have that horse studies like, money coming in. So,
yeah. It's
good times. Well, after a few years stint as praetor, he got what he wanted, baby. Became consul of Rome in 59 BCE. So, I mean, that's as high up the ladder as you can get.
Yeah.
Well, yet. So far, at
yeah.
least.
Well, and by the way, as far as the debts, he turned to his buddy Crassus, or Marcus Licinius mm-hmm. Crassus, who was mega rich, and he helped pay off some of Caesar's debts. And
but he
acted
didn't pay
as,
all of them.
Yeah, yeah, just some of them. And then he acted as the guarantor for the others, basically saying like, "I will make sure Julius pays you back."
Yeah.
So he covered for him, and they generally were longtime buddies. They both ended up becoming super powerful, along with a guy by the name of Pompey. And eventually those three form sort of like an alliance of like, we're the three of the most powerful guys in Rome, and we're going to work together, and that way nobody can do anything to any individual one of us.
Mm-hmm. And they were called the Three Amigos.
The Three Amigos, a.k.a. the First Triumvirate.
Yeah, which means the Three Men.
Yeah, three it's like an alliance of three guys, basically.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with the Holy Triumvirate, which is Rush, the band. Don't get it mixed up.
Yeah, don't get it twisted, y'all.
Six equally talented, but very different guys.
Yeah, it's all completely different.
Three, you know.
Yeah,
yeah, so he moved on up. And an interesting thing is that even kind of throughout this, he'll occasionally go out for some military shenanigans.
Yeah, shenanigans being conquering entire regions.
Yeah, entire regions. He liked to. I don't know if he liked it. I'm assuming he liked it, but his specialty was conquering tribes.
Yeah, he was really good at that.
Which, and if you think about it, it's like, you know, if your population is kind of segmented and not really able to form a cohesive fighting force, even if you only have one legion, which is 5,000 guys, that's 5,000 guys. Like, that's much bigger than,
mm-hmm.
not, you know, and that's not to diminish his accomplishments, because he really was a brilliant, you know,
yeah,
military, you know, commander.
Tactician.
But he definitely had, usually had numbers on his side.
Yeah.
But yeah, 60 BC is when he started to seek election for consul, along with two other guys. But he did win, along with a guy named Marcus Bibulus.
Bibulus.
And it really, he basically, it really just became, it became known, this sort of period of time with him as consul, even though there were supposed to be two, became known as the consulship of Julius and Caesar. Because when he, one of his first sort of, you know, legislative changes that he wanted to do was to redistribute some public lands to poor people. Because he had, you know, he had a thing for poor people. He was the people's hero.
Yeah, he lived there. He lived amongst the plebs for a time, so he
understood
the struggle in a way.
Yeah, and so Pompey and Crassus, his two squads, as part of the First Triumvirate, they basically were like, yeah, let's do that. So they basically brought in soldiers to try to enforce this. The other consul, Marcus Bibulus, said, you know, like, there are unfavorable omens about this. I think I'm going to have to void this one. I'm gonna have to veto this. And then basically, Julius's armed goons basically like ran him away. They beat up his bodyguards and they threw a bucket of poop on him.
Mm-hmm.
So, after that,
classic,
he was like, I'm gonna take a break for about a year.
Yeah.
And so all he really did was like occasionally send out a message stating that omens were bad, like from his house. Like he'd stay at home and be like, go tell them I said there are bad omens about this.
Yeah.
But basically, he just couldn't stop Caesar after that. It was a power play.
Yeah,
you know, a real boss move. So that's why it became known as the consulship of Julius and Caesar, as opposed to Julius and Marcus. Fun. Yeah,
Julius was the heavy hitter here.
Fun times.
Speaking of heavy hitting, though, boy, did he hit some tribes heavy.
He did.
Yeah. You might have learned if you took a World Civilizations course, which You likely did, that Julius Caesar conquered most of Gaul, which is modern-day France, Belgium, Germany, parts of Britain, the Gaelic tribes of the Northwest. I think we briefly mentioned in Celtic Week that he conquered the Gaelic peoples.
Yeah, not completely, but he definitely made those inroads.
Yeah, he didn't get all the way up in there.
Because his first attempt actually didn't really go well, because
you
know, he crossed that channel, and he just didn't really have enough dudes. And a big part of, you know, military conquest is your supply line. You have to have resources and people when you need them, and it was hard for him to kind of get a foothold. Eventually, he came to command four legions around this time, which is, you know, like I said, about 20,000 guys.
Yeah, it's a lot of guys.
Basically, once he got more dudes, he was able to get a foothold and actually, you know, sort of start to sweep across a bit of those the British Isles,
yeah,
as you might call them. And so the interesting thing is that usually at this time he had governorship sort of these territories that he was taking, because they kind of go hand in hand. It's like if you conquer territory,
you get to be the ruler.
Yeah, basically in a way. And so usually though, when you have a typical governorship, you know as we talked about, he would have been potentially prosecuted for his debts because he still had them.
Mm-hmm.
And usually you would only have like 1 year while you were governing things to be immune. After that, you had to pay up, because part of that is because once you became a governor of something, that was a way to make bank, because you would start kind of collecting like tribute and taxes. And
yeah,
because it's not like they just burned everything to the ground and put a flag in it and were like, this is now Rome. Like they left a lot of things intact. They brought people as part of the empire, or not the empire yet,
but it was definitely imperialist.
Yeah, pretty much. And so that was probably part of it. But they actually gave him 5 years. So he still, avoided prosecution, not just for his debts, but also for all the things he was doing, like, throwing buckets of poop on people and driving out of town.
Yeah, just, being a general nuisance.
Yeah, basically, he could potentially be prosecuted for some of those things.
Yeah.
So as we see, that practice of making people immune is like, if you're a troublemaker,
yeah,
that's kind of the place to be.
But he was having a good time conquering Gaul during the Gallic Wars. Interesting, a Roman historian, Plutarch, you've probably heard of him.
Yep.
He wrote in one of his Historias that during the Gallic War, Caesar's army, his legion of 20,000, fought against 3 million men total. Lots of tribes.
Obviously not all at the same time.
Yeah, not all at the same time. This is across the entirety of the Gallic Wars. But 3 million men's a lot. 1 million were killed, estimated. Another million were enslaved. He subjugated around 300 tribes and destroyed 800 cities.
Yeah, and let's be clear. It's not like he started with 20,000 guys and it was the same 20,000. They would, replenish their numbers over time.
Yeah.
But it makes sense because, if you attack with overwhelming force, you've got 20,000 dudes versus like 500 at a time.
Yeah.
There's not much. Enough said.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like,
there you go.
So he just, he really, he went horde on those,
went real horde.
Tribes.
Yeah. But like all good things, they must come to an end in 50 BCE. The Senate called Caesar back to Rome. They're like, hey, buddy, your 5 years is up. We're going to need you to come on back.
Time to pay the piper.
Yeah, he's like, oh, shit. Like, got to go back. Got to pay my debts. I'm not going to be immune to this anymore. So he came back to Rome with a single legion with him. And he was just like, let's do this.
But here's the important thing about that is that the Rubicon, the river, which I think runs mostly around what was then possibly the southern sort of city border of Rome. Point is, it was a common thing that you were even if you were a military commander, no matter your status, you were never supposed to cross the Rubicon going towards Rome with an active military legion, because that is a sign of extreme aggression, basically.
Yeah, seen as an
act of war.
It's
basically like
war.
Stepping into the city with an army, and not, directly, because, as we said, Rome sort of encompasses a much broader area, but the Rubicon was like, past this, you don't bring your armies, because that suggests
that you're
a hostile kind of show of force.
Yeah, but that's exactly what he wanted to do.
He did.
He returned to Rome.
He's
and
like,
just waged a civil war.
I ain't paying shit. I got my squad with me.
Yeah,
I got my salad. What are you gonna do?
Exactly.
Yeah,
got salad dressing. It's crazy.
Because you were supposed to disband your army when you got ordered back, and instead,
he
brought
him
home.
Yeah, because if he come back, he was gonna face the music, as they say.
Yeah. Well, and supposedly there are some accounts that Caesar supposedly quoted Menander, who was an Athenian playwright, and once he crossed the river, he said, the die is cast.
Yeah,
or let the die be cast. Which is basically like, the die is cast, as in, there's no going back. I brought my army, I'm here
I've
to
rolled
throw
my die,
down.
And we're just going to see what happens.
Yeah.
And he chased Pompey, his other consul, one of the three, around Europe for a little bit, defeated his army in Greece. He was chasing him around.
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, the higher-ups couldn't count on, like, the people to rise up and stop Caesar, because they liked Caesar.
Yeah, they were all about Caesar.
Go get him, boss.
Yeah, they were all cool with him.
Can I offer you a sandwich?
Yeah.
Or maybe a nice Caesar salad?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, so back in Rome, actually, he was appointed as dictator, which he held for 11 days.
Well, and to be clear, typically, when you're appointed dictator, it was the whole concept was, we're in an emergency. For a maximum of 6 months, someone can be a dictator. That was the general policy.
Yeah,
it was like, we have so
control.
Much shit going on right now that we need one guy who can take full command. Let's pick somebody. But in 6 months, it's done. And so...
Yeah, it wasn't just like someone taking over power.
Yeah, it was really just...
It was,
know,
out of an emergency.
We're in a bad way. We got to kind of, you know...
Yeah. But he only held the position for 11 days, and he was like, well, I'll just be a consul again.
Yeah.
He followed Pompey to Egypt because while his armies had been defeated, or most of his armies had been defeated, he was still out there. Because
in a
large
way, Pompey was seen as like a traitor to him.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
It was like, this guy betrayed me. And since they were part of that triumvirate, it's like even more heinous.
Exactly.
Like, we were supposed to be.
Yeah, we were,
you know, the power of three was supposed to set us free.
But no.
But now you're in Egypt.
Exactly.
And you betrayed me.
But as it turns out, Egypt was a pretty good place for Caesar. He goes there following Pompey. He has him killed there. But he is like, they were friends. He was saddened that Pompey had to die, and he had Pompey's assassins murdered.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because he didn't, like, I mean, it's not like he showed up and he was like, kill that man. Like, he was like, Pompey's going to die, but Pompey had already been killed when he got there. And so he was like, maybe it was the thing of like, you were supposed to wait.
Oh, yeah, maybe I was supposed to kill
him. Well, because the idea probably would have been like, well, they probably would have tried to prosecute him instead, potentially. But they're like, we did it for you, Caesar. And he was like, cool, off with your heads.
Yeah.
So
don't go against...
He had the assassins killed, because in reality,
don't go against
Pompey
the big
was,
boy.
You know, he was technically an old pal.
Yeah. When he was in Egypt, he got up to his old shenanigans again, starting wars.
Well,
he,
yeah, because there was actually a civil war going on between the child pharaoh and that pharaoh's sort of regent, Cleopatra.
Yeah.
You may have heard of her.
Yeah, may have heard of her. She's a, you know, little lady.
And he was like, oh, wars,
I'm
this
good
is what
that.
I do.
Yeah,
I'm,
like, I'm good at that,
I brought
guys.
My boys.
So yeah, he fought against the child pharaoh and won, and then he installed Cleopatra as the leader of Egypt. Had a relationship with her, which he was still married at this time, but according to like Roman tradition,
it's not in the same zip code.
Technically not adultery,
it's
I guess.
Out of the zip code. Maybe because they weren't in Rome. Maybe it's like you had to be with.
Yeah, it's
the
like your marriage only counts if you're in Rome.
Which is how it is now. If you're married here in America, crusty.
Wait, when you go overseas,
go over
you're
to
not
Rome,
married?
When in Rome. Isn't that the general policy? I thought that was...
I have no idea.
Oh.
I would not guess so, but yeah, well, yeah, you know.
You got a heart of gold. You would never.
Exactly. I'm a good guy. But yeah, so he possibly even had a child with Cleopatra. It's it's a little bit of a gray area, but I mean, I wouldn't blame him.
Probably a kid called Caesarion. Caesarion.
Yeah.
Not spelled the same way as Caesarian section.
No, but close.
Close. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of suspicious. It's like, I've had a kid, I'm going to name him very similarly to the guy.
Yeah.
You know, that she was, I mean, yeah.
Makes sense. I'm going to keep that going. Back in Rome, they gave him another year as dictator in 48 BCE, and he just used that time to
chase
down.
And that
alone
was stretching the limits. That was a new thing.
Yeah.
A full year, they were like, wow, they really believed in him.
So, and he used that time to chase down Pompey's remaining supporters around Europe. Just going around and be like, hey, we can't have any of this shit anymore. So goes around, takes them out, and then they were just like, man, we are really liking what you're doing. How about 10 more years, buddy? And he's like, I'll do it.
Yeah, he's like, okay, if you insist.
Yeah, and that was when he started to kind of focus less on murdering entire groups of people.
Conquering valiantly.
Okay. And that was when he was like, all right, let's get in, let's start some social policies here.
He wanted to actually do some good.
Yeah.
Or what he thought was
which
good.
Which he kind of did.
He implemented
some debt restructuring laws that eventually wiped out about a fourth of all the debt in Rome.
Yeah.
So, I mean, good for him.
which makes sense because personal him to him, with
he's
dead,
like,
yeah,
he's
yeah,
like, I gotta get rid of this. He made term limits for governors, which is always a good thing. Term limits are always a good thing. And he even, you know, distributed land to some of his own veterans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, respect the troops.
Yeah, support the troops. And well, one thing to keep in mind is that even though Caesar was strong, the central government in Rome was really very weak compared to all the territory that Rome had conquered. Part of that had to do with all the corruption and the infighting between politicians, senators, whatever. Everyone was, you know, trying to get power. And so there wasn't, you know, a lot of order. And that was one of his big goals, was to strengthen that central government and to basically restore order to the Republic. Because when the Republic is weak, there's a risk of it not being a Republic anymore.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Yeah, basically he just gave
of his, but
governors more control too, instead of needing like Roman intermediaries to like settle things. He was kind of like, I trust you guys, you can handle it.
Yeah, out in those territories.
And obviously the Julian calendar was probably one of his biggest well-known accomplishments. He implemented, they went by the moon for their calendar, which made no sense. Everything's
before
out of
they
order.
Did, yeah, they had the moon.
Yeah, and then I guess inspired by his time in Egypt, he saw how they, you know, revolved around the sun. They're like, oh, that seems pretty good. And I mean, that's basically the same calendar that we use today.
Yeah.
With maybe only a few minor adjustments to
it. Well, and what he did was, which year was it? He added, when he decided to make that switch, he added 3 months to that current year to get them caught back up, because that's how far off they had gone.
Yeah.
And he was the one who said the year should basically be 365 1/4 days, and we'll do the leap year.
Yeah,
that was his. So thanks,
thank
Julius.
You. Yeah, yeah. It's pretty crazy. That's lasted all the way through history.
Yeah,
but he got a little selfish, as dictators tend to do. He started giving himself all these random titles, like Father of the Fatherland, the Perfect of the Morals is another one, which basically gave him the rights as a censor.
Best looking dictator. Just,
exactly.
You know, things like.
All those types
of things.
It's
like going up on the Oscars and being like, the Oscar goes to me, and that one's for me too. They're all for me.
Yeah. Perfect of the Morals is funny. I guess Roman religion and society was kind of based off of like morality.
Yeah.
They were all about that, and he saw, it's just funny that he named himself, I'm the best, I'm the most moral. You guys are a bunch of sickos.
And all the while, basically pissing off all the other politicians more and more and more.
Yeah, and by putting like people that supported him in office.
Yeah.
So getting a little corrupt as the dictatorship goes on. But yeah, it didn't last the whole 10 years, as he was hoping.
Yeah.
The Ides of March, as
the
we
of
know.
March. Which March 15th.
March 15th, yeah. It's a day of religious significance. It's also a day known for settling debts in Rome. Which is ironic that this happened on that
you
day. Caesar was stabbed reportedly 23 times by a group of about 60 Senate members and assassins.
That's what didn't make sense to me when I read that. It was like 60 people participated, but he was stabbed 23 times.
Like, well, there's just like a like, gang
yeah,
of 60.
Get him! Get
23
him.
People had the knives, and the others, they were just like, you're doing
they
a really
like,
good job stabbing
together,
him.
And they would like hold hands and be
maybe
like, we'll do it together.
There'd be no way of knowing.
It's probably some people just throwing kicks.
Yeah.
Little right hook.
Either way, not a good way to go. Not a good way to go.
Yeah.
But as
And then there's that, it inspired that famous scene in Julius Caesar where he's like, A tu, Brute. Because Brutus, who was supposed to be his successor, I think, sort of participated.
Yeah. So not good. Yeah. It was, he named him as a successor in his will, which also in his will, this is from the Shakespearean play Julius Caesar. I'm not sure if this is actually true. I couldn't confirm it. But he left each male citizen of Rome, 75 drachmas. Whatever. Apparently, in today's spending power, that would be about $277. And he also made much of his private gardens public land. So, way to go.
He, too, had a heart of gold.
Yeah, if sometimes. That's even true.
If
that's
even
true. So Caesar is a complicated figure.
Well, and you know, with him having been the people's hero, once he died, all the people were like, yo, what the fuck?
Yeah.
That was our guy. That was our champion. And then it just enters into a whole can of worms, downward spiral. You end up with the Roman Empire. Fall of the Republic, the Rise of the Sith.
Yeah, exactly. And
from there, things just get
it just gets real bad. And there you go. And now it's nothing.
R.I.P. Jules.
Yeah, you're
gone too soon.
Yeah, exactly. Gone too soon.
He did kill a lot of people. So
yeah, maybe it was good for him. Maybe you should have just focused more on the social stuff
and the salad making.
Yeah, and the salad making. Stick to what you're good at.
Stick to what you're good at.
Well, he was good at conquering people though, so never mind. Somebody
probably told him that. He was like, you know what? I will keep murdering tribes.
Yeah, I will conquer most of Gaul. Good times.
He's trying to get that perfect season.
Mm-hmm.
600-0.
Yeah. Wow. Well, RIP.
Sad.
And
a hero to some, a villain to others.
This one's pretty much just a hero to everybody.
Next
unless
one's all
your
hero,
name is Grendel or
all
Grendel's
day,
mother.
Erde, everywhere.
Or a dragon.
Yeah. He is Beowulf.
Exactly. And not the shitty CGI.
Yeah. We're going to pretend that movie didn't happen. It's kind of weird because it had like the animation style was bizarre for one thing. It was like animated, but it was almost like they were trying to make it look like
The whole thing was like half the animated, Peter Cushing, weird. Carrie Fisher CGI characters from the new Star Wars movies. That's
very
basically
strange.
What they did with the whole movie.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make sense. Like, you could have, I don't know, like, why do that, especially with Beowulf? So, you know what? Beowulf needs to be like weird animation.
Yeah.
That like tries to look real but isn't.
I think part of it is like, and which we'll talk about. They actually this guy, I think John Gardner, he wrote a book called Grendel that is like, it's written from the point of view of Grendel and like about his origins, but it's really like about like existentialism, and it's like it's not actually like primarily about Beowulf, and that got made into an animated movie called not Grendel but. It was called Grendel, Grendel, Grendel. Three Grendels.
Ooh.
And it was the second, here's a fun fact, the second full-length animated film ever made in Australia.
Dang. All right.
Which makes sense. It's hard to animate things when you're, you know, like getting chased by like a pack of dingoes or...
Yeah. Or you know, boxing with the kangaroo.
Yeah.
Or smashing giant spiders, chugging a Foster's.
Yeah.
It's hard to get things done.
Yeah, but I think part of that is like, the whole reason I mentioned that is like, there's this need to, if you're taking something that's been around for a long time, to kind of like try to make it your own, you know? Like, hey, we're going to do Beowulf, and it's going to be animated, but it's going to be like experimental and interesting and original in our own way.
Yeah.
And it's like,
and here's the
if
thing
something's
about
great,
experiments,
you don't need to do that.
They don't always work.
They usually fail.
Yeah, especially when it's with
that's what science movies. Is. Science is like failing a bunch of times and then succeeding once.
Yeah, and you only need to get it right once.
Yeah.
Unless it's something extremely important. Then
and they got it wrong.
Get it right
Boy,
a
did
lot
they get
times.
It wrong.
Yeah. I think J.R.R. Tolkien also had a... he was working on like a Beowulf-like story of his own, and obviously he passed away. I think
like
his
reimagining of it, like he did with Sigurd and Gudrun.
Yeah, that's kind of his thing, reimagining, you know, mythology and stuff like that. But I think his son is working on it or has already finished it and like is publishing it, or it might already even be out. I'm not sure. But that would be really cool because Tolkien always brings his own... I don't know. I like what he does to stuff like that.
We hope that Tolkien Jr. can capture
what
something
his father...
similar.
I think he's good. OG. A lot of like the Tolkien fans have said
they have
that...
they accepted him.
Yeah, that he's good. He knows what he's doing, and he respects his daddy's work. So
that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
But if you don't know who Beowulf is, here he is. He was a hero of the Geats, which is a Scandinavian or a Northern Germanic tribe in the Scandinavian area.
Mm-hmm.
Not around anymore.
Are you sure?
Yeah, he appears in the epic poem named for him, Beowulf, which is pretty old stuff. A lot of scholars kind of debate over the true age, but it's commonly... accepted somewhere between 975 and 1025.
Yeah, around 1,000.
Yeah. Also, unknown author. They just call him the Beowulf poet.
Mm-hmm.
So
and that was collected, I believe, in a larger manuscript of a bunch of different stuff, and they were like, "We don't know where this came from.
Who wrote that?"
Because it was, I mean, the people who could actually, you know, because books would have been handwritten back then. The people who could actually write books, you know, it was rare to have anyone with the proper skill.
Yeah.
It was hard to, you know, get them properly bound in a way where maybe they wouldn't, you know, deteriorate over time. So there's really no, but it was written in, I believe, is it Old English?
I believe so. And I think it's one of the, like, the earliest surviving works.
And Old English is super hard to read.
Yeah.
So is, I think, Middle English is too. I mean, until you just get to English.
Yeah, I can't imagine anything before like just a few hundred years ago being super easy.
Yeah. He's not one of the Volsungs, but we put him right up there. We put him right up there.
He's still a cool dude.
He's a badass.
Just don't let the movie ruin it for you.
Yeah. I'd say just skip the movie. Wait for
someone else to do it better.
Yeah.
I would actually like a remake of that.
Yeah.
If they could do it right.
Me too.
Because as we'll see, it's a pretty good story.
Yeah.
But
so it basically starts with this guy named King Hrothgar.
Which, by the way, Skyrim, you got some splaining to do. Hi, Hrothgar. Totally lifted that from Beowulf, but go ahead.
Yeah. Anyhow, King Hrothgar of Denmark, so he was a Dane. Basically, he kicked ass for a while, you know, taking territory, getting richer, and he was like, you know what? I want to live on forever. Even after I'm dead, let's build a dope bar where we can drink forever. It's going to be awesome. A mead hall for him and his squad. The biggest one that they had ever seen. And it became known. It was called Heorot Hall.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with Heorot.
Heorot.
Yeah. Where, you know, they would have like local bands come in and jam out for the sake of the king.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't have like guitars and drums. Maybe like a lute, a nice lute.
Mm.
A little.
Very fancy.
Reed flute,
yeah.
Perhaps. Do some gesture tricks. I don't know how it went. But basically, he just wanted to build like a place to party. Can't blame him. Unfortunately, a curse fell on him and all of his squad. An ogre, a fiend named Grendel, which is, I mean, he's not technically, because he's technically the main boss, is Grendel's mother. Anyhow, Grendel, he's big, he's ugly, and for some reason, he stinks. And swords, weapons cannot penetrate his skin.
Yeah, well, he's said to have scales on his skin and horny growths. Mm-hmm. So
he had a face that only a mother could love.
Yep.
And she did.
Very true.
So he would basically, over and over, show up to basically murder everybody in Heorot Hall and eat them.
Yeah, he was plagued by the sounds of joy and laughter that really caused him great pain.
Yeah,
and
if they had just invited him, we could have avoided all of this.
Yeah, it could have all been avoided, but, you know, they inconsiderate.
He just crashed the party over and over and over, and then eventually they stopped partying pretty much. They were like, you know, this is not working out. Everybody who shows up dies.
Yeah, maybe we should do something about this Grendel character.
Yeah, our cover charge has become ridiculous. We can't afford it. The club's closing down. Grendel was forbidden to kill the king, though, so that's nice.
Yeah. Interesting, though. In the story, Grendel is said to be a descendant of the biblical Cain. If you know the story of Cain and Abel, the sons of Adam and Eve, Cain murdered his brother Abel.
The first murderer.
For nothing, I think.
Well, he didn't have a good reason. Basically, and forgive me if I botch this, I haven't been to church in a while, but basically, they both make up offerings to God, and God essentially was like, you know what? I like Abel's offering better.
Yeah, he gave him like fruit or something.
And so Cain
got mad.
Yeah, Cain killed him out of jealousy, basically.
Yeah. So that is what we're dealing with here. A monster descended
born to murder.
Yeah.
And crash parties and, yeah.
All those types of things. Yeah.
Yeah. Not a stand-up guy.
No.
So, word travels to the Geats, the Geatish king, Hygelac. Hygelac.
It's a good name.
And he was like, and Beowulf was just chilling in the court of the king, and he was like, you know what? I bet I could kill him. I'm going to take my 15 squad, all my boys, my merry men, and, you know, we're just going to go see what's up.
Yeah. See what we come back with.
They head over to Denmark. You know, they meet the big kahuna, the king himself. He's like, you know what? I'm Beowulf. I think I can, you know, take care of this problem for you. And so he was like, yeah, okay. Free heroes to kill a monster that's ruining all my parties.
Yeah, I mean, you know? I'll take that deal.
Yeah. I haven't had a good trip in years. Every time I drop acid, Grendel shows up and he starts smashing, you know, my vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
He just ruins all
bad
my
vibes.
It's bad vibes.
So they kind of camp out in Heorot. And they wait for Grendel to show. They start partying, having a good time.
Well, and then
they know Grendel will show.
Yeah, they know he's going to show up. And then one of Hrothgar's squad is like, "What's so great about Beowulf? And then he basically accuses Beowulf of having lost in a swimming contest. Because I guess that was like,
no,
you can't swim faster than that guy. You're not the best. And he was like, you know what? Beowulf was like, not only did I beat that guy at swimming, but I swam for 5 days, survived a storm, and while I was in the water, I killed a sea monster. So what's up?
Mm-hmm.
True Don't badass. Miss Beowulf. He had the spirit of a Volsung.
Yeah,
I have
to
say.
He did.
And he liked to party.
He was just a little late. A little late to the party. But speaking of parties, Grendel shows up as expected. You know, sounds of joy and laughter, man. Just driving crazy. Poor little guy. So he
just
shows up.
Him some mead. Maybe that's all I ever wanted.
But he shows up. Guys, where's my invitation? Again, you're doing this to me?
If somebody's a dick to you, just become their friend.
Exactly. But they didn't choose this path. Beowulf is like, all right, guys, I can handle Grendel on my own. Even though I brought my squad with me, all that stuff, you guys are here. I can handle him, and I'm not going to use the sword because Grendel and I are equal. He basically was like, as good as Grendel.
Yeah, it was like, oh, your sword can't defeat him. And he was like, well, why would I need a sword? Are you saying he's tougher than me?
Yeah.
Nobody's tougher than me. I can take this guy.
Yeah. So he's got some self-esteem problems.
He's got something to prove. He's got a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah, so he wrestles with Grendel for quite a while. He gets pretty violent, and he eventually tears his right arm off. Does it matter? He tears off one of his arms from the shoulder and just starts like waving it around.
He just rips it off.
Yeah, and that he doesn't kill Grendel immediately. Grendel realizes that he has been bested. I mean, he's not going to be able to beat Beowulf with one arm. So he runs back home to mommy in their little
like
secret
a little
lair.
Bitch.
Yeah, and we don't hear from him for a little while.
We don't.
So they're like, hey, Beowulf's, you know, waving this arm around. He's like, look what I did, look what I did. Basically,
yeah,
his trophy.
And he nails it to the rafters of Heorot Hall.
And there you go. I mean, that's a dope story. Someone walks in, they're like, whoa, what's that arm up there for? Be like, you ever heard of Beowulf?
Yeah. Yeah. Ever heard of Beowulf?
Yeah, and then there you go. You got
he
got
basically
a story
becomes
on your hands.
A star.
Yeah.
He gets his handprint on the Walk of Fame leading up the steps of Heorot Hall.
Yeah. First one.
Word gets round, obviously, you know, Grendel comes home crying to mommy.
Yeah.
And she's sometimes described as like a demon or a demoness. Sometimes it just says she's also an ogre or an ogress.
Yeah, but she's never given a name in the story. So we'll just be calling her Grendel's mom.
Yeah, she's just Grendel's mother. So basically, she shows up and she's like,
what the hell, guys?
You hurt my boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's basically the ultimate, can I speak to the manager?
Yeah.
It's like, he fell down in the ball pit. I'm going to need to speak to your manager.
Yeah, basically.
So
basically, she shows up, you know, fucks some shit up and takes back Grendel's arm.
Yeah.
But that's Beowulf's trophy. I mean, how is he going to prove that he beat an ogre and tore his arm off? And became the coolest guy ever.
Exactly.
How's he going to prove it? He's got to go and, you know, get his honor back.
Yeah, so he chases her down, but unfortunately, some of the men, Hrothgar's men, even one of his most trusted and best warriors is slain in the Great Hall. So there's some stakes now. We got some stakes. The arm is gone. Beowulf's trophy. Hrothgar wants... you know, to avenge his fallen warriors.
For sure.
So Beowulf goes in with Hrothgar. They take Hrothgar and like some of their men with them. They
to the lair, which is like
under a lake.
Yeah, it's under a lake. So it's like where you go down and
like
then like it's like a U shape and there's like it's like a cavern, a grotto potentially.
Yeah.
A grotto of some kind.
Yeah.
But basically you have to like swim
all
to
the
bottom
of
the
lake. Which
and
he does by himself.
He
gets there and he's like, they brought all these people, but he's like, I can do this by myself.
Yeah,
guys.
And they're seeing like sea monsters in the water. So Beowulf's like killing them with his spear. He puts on his armor and supposedly swims downward for hours.
Yeah, it's a long, like, it's a long swim to the bottom.
It's quite the breath hold. I mean, he's a champ.
Yeah.
He's a champ.
He's the water champ.
He's practiced a lot. He's the water champ.
Yeah.
And he swims down all the way for hours. There's like these creepy fish that are like cutting him up. They're all sharp and shit.
But he's got his armor.
Yeah, he's got his armor. He ends up in the cavern. He's thrown down with Mama Grendel. But she, much like Grendel, is a badass. She can't be hurt by any sword that he possesses, you know, he's like stabbing her, smacking her with the sword, and it's just like chipping and, you know, breaking. And then he realizes he's not going to be able to beat her. And then he sees the legendary giant, the fabled giant's sword on the wall. And he's like, oh, I'll just use that.
Yeah.
And so he does.
Nice placement. Yes, he takes his sword.
Deus ex machina.
Yeah, and he decapitates Grendel's mother with the sword.
And then Grendel himself.
Yeah, he grows back.
Just in case you thought I was sorry.
Well, yeah, he goes back. He's like kind of exploring the lair, and Grendel's even like he's dead. He's not even like hanging on. He's just like, I might as well. He cuts off the head, and he takes that back up. Well, actually, first, the giant sword that he used also was destroyed because it got Grendel's like toxic blood on it, and it just like withered away. So he goes up, he swims back up the lake, presumably taking several hours, and he's got Grendel's head and like the hilt of the sword, and he's like, I did it.
And he doesn't take any of the wealth, like the gold and stuff, that he sees in the cavern.
Yeah.
He doesn't need that. He has trophies.
Exactly. But Hrothgar gives him many trophies and treasures for killing Grendel and Grendel's mom anyway. So it all works out in the end. He gets what he deserves.
He's a real mensch.
Yeah. But Hrothgar warns Beowulf about his pride. He says, hey, man, you did some pretty incredible things. Didn't think that any of that was possible. But don't let it go to your head. Yeah, be careful.
And we saw a lot of that as well. I mean, it's kind of a common theme in a lot of these like old like myths and legends of like, you know, the hero's great, but he's got some kind of kind of fatal flaw that they can't overcome, or you know, they try to, but then, you know, something tragic happens. Anyways, which it
for
does.
Beowulf, it seems to be his pride. Yeah. He returns to his land, the land of the Geats, though. And he's made the king. Basically, they're just like, wow, we didn't realize how much of a badass you were when you were here. So he gets to become the king.
He earned his stripes.
He lives, you know, has a great reign for about 50 years. You know, just killing it, having a good time. Until one day, one damn day, a slave is like, I'm going to steal a cup.
He's what?
I'm going to steal a cup.
I don't think I heard you.
He goes,
steal a cup?
Yeah, he goes to a dragon's lair. I guess they're just like around.
They just hang
around.
It's
like, oh, like that's the Dragon Slayer over there. That's the Kmart.
You can invite the dragon to book club if you want.
Yeah. So he sneaks into the Dragon's Lair and steals a golden cup from the dragon. Because as we know, all dragons love hoarding gold.
They love hoarding gold, and often they particularly love cursed gold.
Yeah, that's the best kind of gold.
Yeah, that's the best kind.
So the dragon realizes that the cup has been stolen and just sends him on like a desolation of smog type deal. He just starts burning all the villages in sight, kind of freaking out. Yeah, it's like, it's one gold cup, bro. Like, come on. It wasn't even like the one ring or anything. Who knows?
Yeah, could have been.
But yeah, so Beowulf and his men, he's like, all right, guys, I've kind of handled stuff like this before, so maybe we should go and like take care of this dragon.
Take back. I can hold my breath for 4 hours.
Yeah.
I can handle this, guys.
So once again, he brings men, but when he encounters the dragon, he's like, I got it. And that proves to be the downfall of Beowulf, is his pride. So he rushes in to fight the dragon, but he is joined by one of his men, joins in, the bravest of
them. Even though he tries to fight it alone, because of that pride, he's like, I don't need help, I can do this myself.
He's quickly outmatched by this fearsome, fire-breathing dragon.
Yeah, he doesn't have the fabled sword of the giants, he just has like a regular sword that's probably decent. But
yeah, I mean, he's probably got something good, but
yeah,
not enough.
Good, but it's not enough. It just can't break through those scales.
Yeah. So one friend, one of the warriors, sees that Beowulf is struggling and joins in, while the rest of his men kind of flee back.
They're
into
all
the
afraid.
Woods.
Yeah, they're all scared of the dragon.
They slay the dragon together, but unfortunately, Beowulf
him
has
and his
been...
buddy Wiglaf.
Oh yeah, Wiglaf. Nice.
Wiglaf.
It's a good name.
Solid name.
Yeah, but Beowulf is mortally wounded, unfortunately, during the fight with the dragon.
Yeah.
And there you go, he passes right there. And Wiglaf blames Beowulf's death on the cowardice of the men who ran away.
Yeah,
But
because he does get that one last blow. Basically, his sword's not working, and the dragon is basically trying to eat him. But he gets a lucky shot with his little dagger, mm-hmm. his little backup sword or whatever, yeah. and somehow that, I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm questioning the, you know, the likelihood, but it seems to me like a sword would be better than a dagger.
Yeah, but it also seems that a person couldn't swim to the bottom of the lake holding their breath for hours at a time.
Maybe they knew something we didn't. Maybe there was a trick to it.
Maybe they had built a breathing apparatus out of kelp.
You know what? I say for our 100th episode special, you, Krusty, you will hold your breath for 4 hours, and we'll see how it goes.
Can do.
You can try.
I can try. Okay.
You can try.
Yeah.
Live stream.
Or we can waterboard one of each other.
Yeah, I mean, there's only, you said one of each other, but there's only two of us.
I know, so I mean, whoever pulls the short straw gets waterboarded.
Okay.
Yeah, sounds good.
We'll pitch it to creative and see what they come up with.
Okay, yeah.
We are creative. That's us. Yeah. Anyhow, Wiglaf was the only one left, so he basically gets the bragging rights and all of the, you know, the inheritance glory. and all the cool stuff.
Yeah, but Beowulf is not... he wasn't taken for granted. His people are very sad, and they also are kind of like, shit, he was the only guy that could really do shit around.
Yeah, they're like, people are afraid of Beowulf, and that probably was keeping them from coming and killing us, and now word's going to get out that he is dead. So
they're a little vulnerable. Yeah. But that's where the story ends. We don't see what happens to his people.
No, we do know that they build sort of like a tower, lighthouse, tomb type deal. On top of his corpse, pretty much, to act as basically like a lighthouse, like guide ships on the coast. Said that they, because of the dragon's hoard, because it was all cursed and shit, that they just buried it so that it could never be unearthed again. Which, in theory, means that you, the noble listener, should get your metal detector, go to the land of the Geats, was it Finland, Norway, Sweden, one of those
somewhere
places,
in that area.
And just go for a walk. See what you find.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do find something, let us know. We'll collect our 10% finder's fee because we, put you on the trail.
Yep.
See what you come up with.
Exactly.
We're excited.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Are you?
I'm very excited.
You look tired.
I am tired.
Got a big trip coming up.
I do have a big trip coming up. I'll be leaving in a couple weeks.
Close-ish to the land of the Geats, but not quite.
Yeah, close-ish.
Be walking on ground that was conquered by Julius Caesar.
I will be. And I will also be seeing a lot of the stuff we talked about in Celtic Week. If you guys haven't listened to those episodes, go on back. It's a good time.
What airport are you flying into?
Just flying into the London airport, I guess. Is it Heathrow?
Heathrow?
I have no idea.
Anyhow,
the one in London.
If we've got any true Scotsmen out there, or Englishmen, or whoever, and you want to show Krusty the ways of the Isles,
hit me up.
Just show up.
Yeah.
Just camp out at the airport.
Just camp out.
Just wear a shirt.
I'll be there with some time within the next few weeks.
Get a sign that says Krusty.
Yeah, and I'll be there sometime soon.
He'll come to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's man versus myth.
That's man versus myth. We're interested to hear how you think they measure up. What do you think?
One's a great... I assume that Beowulf was a good leader in his 50-year reign after defeating the Grendels.
We don't know.
the Grendel family. It sounds like he had a good time. I mean, his people liked him. He kept him safe. He definitely had an issue with pride. Caesar had an issue with not wanting to pay back his debts.
Yeah.
So instead of paying his debts,
if you know anybody named Julius, don't loan him money. Don't give him $5 for a sandwich or anything like that.
Yeah,
he won't pay you back.
Will
not only will he not pay you back, he will change the laws so that he doesn't have to pay you back.
Exactly. That's,
and then he'll kill your dog.
So he seems to be putting off the inevitable while Beowulf, he rushes in, knowing his own strength, and he's like, I got this.
Yeah.
So, it's interesting. Both interesting characters. I would like to see fantastic movies made out of both. And I'm sure there's been tons of movies on Julius Caesar.
Yeah.
No?
I said yeah.
Oh, I was listening. No, all right.
I mean, I don't know of another movie. about Beowulf, other than the terrible 2007.
I thought there was like an old one,
like an old animation, like old, or something.
I mean, like really old, like 70s or 80s, maybe.
Yeah.
That's like pretty.
Maybe we'll make our own home video style.
Maybe we will. I call playing Grendel's mom.
I think you'd be perfect for that role.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
I will be Wiglaf.
You'll, there you go. I can see that.
I can see that. Anyhow, hit us up on the socials. Let us know your thoughts. Who's your fave? Do you think that Beowulf should be ranked among the Volsungs? Tell us that. Tell us your thoughts on that. We have some big things coming up. Just in general, we've also got the next episode, next week, that is, we're going to give you a little bit of an introduction, if you will, not the whole deal, but an introduction to how to get what you want out of life and out of people, the things you might want to say,
mm-hmm.
Or write or broadcast across secret transmissions to poison your enemy camps from within. All of that good juju. It'll be good.
Yeah.
We'll catch you on the flip. Good.